Welcome to another SWR podcast. My name is Toby Webb. I've been off the podcast for a little while. You've been listening to my colleagues, Tom Outram, particularly Hannah Halmari, doing a sterling job over the course of this year. But now joining me again for yet another podcast is Joe Fattorini, closest thing wine gets to a celebrity rather than a celebrity in wine. Joe, welcome back to the podcast. How are you?
Thank you very much. And you clearly delineated me from Kylie Minogue, which is not something people have to do very often. So I'm very delighted about being that way. I don't know if I'm really a wine celebrity, but I do occasionally try. And somebody shouted at me on the bus, it's Wino Kenobi. They'd obviously had a couple of glasses before they got on. I think I was Obi-Wine Kenobi on the show, but Wino Kenobi fits even better.
Let me caveat my compliment by saying it's a low bar.
It is. It's a low bar.
Joe is known for various things, and why not least the wine show. And we've had previous podcast conversations where we talked about particularly your area of expertise, Joe, which is on consumers and marketing. So in this podcast, I would like to point out, whilst I am one of the founders of SWR and my job title is apparently executive director, although my colleagues do most of the heavy lifting, my views in this podcast are not representative of the SWR. They do not represent the official position of the SWR. I have been working in sustainable business for more than 20 years, and I have a bee in my bonnet that I always had around consumers and sustainability. So I'm going to take a deliberately provocative stance here with Joe. The main reason we're doing this is it makes it more interesting to have a conversation if we do that. A frisson of conflict or disagreement so that we both become more interesting to you, the listener. So with that caveat, Joe, my suggestion to you is that communicating sustainability to consumers in wine is too difficult at the moment, as it is in many other products. And I am concerned it is a canard. It is a false hope. And my concern is that when it doesn't work, which it won't and doesn't for lots of reasons, it distracts us from the real business of sustainability in wine, which is finding efficiencies, improving soil health, sorting out packaging, sorting out labor standards, working out how the industry itself is going to survive, rather than going on about consumers. And with SWR, I've always wanted us to do the B2B stuff before we do B2C. So my suggestion to you, Joe, is that engaging consumers in sustainability at the moment in wine is a waste of time. Discuss.
When you say too difficult, let's just drill into that. What do you mean by too difficult to do?
I'll answer that with an example that you gave me some time ago about how do people buy in supermarkets. You know, they buy wine in supermarkets. And we've seen the same research in the Bottle Weight Report that SWR puts out. You know, it's something sticking out the shelf is enough to put up sales. It doesn't even matter what it says on it. The idea that we can communicate the complexity of sustainability and make it into a USP for purchasing decisions, I think, is just too difficult to do. You might listen to this, listener, and you might think, well, of course, that's already been done. We've got organic and biodynamic wine. But those are not sustainable, in my opinion, because organic has all sorts of its own problems, as does biodynamic. If you look at a full LCA, life cycle assessment of wine, organic and biodynamic in some ways can be less sustainable because of the carbon emissions and so on associated with them than a conventional wine, in inverted commas. So I guess the answer to your question is, Joe, it's too complicated for consumers to understand without the level of engagement that is required to do so. And it's a tiny, tiny proportion of them that do it. Even though wine has this unbelievable advantage of being directly traceable back to co-op and back to the land it came from. Yes. It's so hard, I think we should be spending our time working on the back end rather than the front.
It's right, but it is deeply problematic for a variety of reasons. I think you're sort of part of the way. My sense is, and I'm coming at it from a different angle, you are somebody who necessarily, because of your work, you look at this from the industry and the sort of gubbins end of the business through to the customer. And my life, variously, either as a TV presenter or as a consultant or working as a merchant, is with the customer tracking back the other way. You know, where do we start? We have certain amounts of evidence around what people think and what their views are towards sustainability. But actually, the bigger, broader analogy that I would tend to have is that being sustainable and sort of saying you're sustainable is a bit like George Bush Jr. saying he's declaring a war on terror. He was declaring war on an adjective. And here, this is aligning yourself to an adjective. Now, actually, people quite like the idea of a war on terror until they realized it was actually people dying in Iraq. That was the specific thing that kind of had to happen. Once it becomes concrete and you say, well, actually, it involves this, people become much less engaged with it. There's that sense that sustainability, well, it's quite a nice sort of woolly thing to go and do. When you actually say it means paying more or it means buying it in a different sort of package, then people start to back up a bit and they suddenly go, oh, no, I didn't mean that. I wanted a nice warm feeling inside. You know, I sort of vaguely felt good about it. There is also an industry problem here, which is, like we said, we've talked before about the idea of the von Restorff effect. This sort of notion that what will tend to happen is that people notice the thing that is not like the other things. So, you know, you've got the series of letters in black. One of them is blue. Everybody remembers the blue letter. You have a series of wines on a shelf without shelf talkers. It kind of doesn't matter what's on the shelf talker. Everybody migrates towards the one with the shelf talker because it's got the thing that none of the other ones have. And actually, that can overcome economic considerations. So we know that it doesn't actually have to have a discount on it. People will just migrate towards it. We are moving into a world where every wine brand, because sustainability as an adjective is so broad, every wine brand goes, yeah, I'm kind of sustainable. And so nobody is really distinctive in that positioning at all, because they all vaguely fulfill that criteria. Somehow, by going and cobbling it together with sellotape and string, they can say, oh, no, I've absolutely sustainable winery. I think winemakers go, well, I really am because I do X, Y, and Z. Nobody cares. All they saw was, given the length of sort of dwell time when people are making wine choices, it's not one of those things where, like you say, the vast majority of customers, I mean, I sort of always loathe slightly the term consumers. Because also, you know, when we talk about it, there's always this great canard about the idea of the wine consumer. It doesn't exist. You know, there's endless variations. And we've got Kantar World Panel, who have been tracking eco-engagement amongst consumers globally and nationally for quite a long time now. In very broad brush terms, roughly there are three groups. About a third of people, give or take, are eco-actives. They're really, really engaged with this stuff. But bear in mind, it is somewhere around like 28% or something. I mean, it's roughly a third. About a third of people, perhaps rather more, they're eco-ambivalent. I mean, they're not against it. They're sort of open to the idea. They generally sort of think that's not a terrible thing. Bear in mind, there is a group of somewhere between a third and 40% who are eco-dismissers, actively turned off by environmental and sustainable messaging, who think not necessarily that it's a bad thing, but they would reject those products because they almost certainly involve a trade-off. So I'm not going to buy that because it won't wash my clothes as well, because it won't taste as good.
Those sets of percentages you just mentioned is exactly what I heard from Marks and Spencer 15 years ago, at least. A third, a third, a third. And you hear this quite a lot in various questions in society. And so my point is, two points. One, sounds like you're agreeing with me.
In part, Toby, I never agree with you fully.
But two, that one third, Marks and Spencer, I think you used to try and call them deep green, which I always thought, that's more like 5%. That one third, they don't know what to do because we don't know how to tell them what is sustainable beyond the false flags of organic and biodynamic, because we haven't done the work yet and we haven't figured out what needs to be done to credibly call things sustainable. So it sounds to me like you've agreed with me.
Sort of, kind of. What we have got into is a challenge in a way that sustainability has become one of the big benchmarks by which wine brands go and promote themselves and by which they do market positioning. Essentially, they sort of say, well, I'm going to position myself, you know, as a sustainable wine brand. Now, I think that is deeply problematic for a number of reasons. I think they are slightly different reasons to the ones that you have. You know, one of those reasons, and I know you had Richard Banfield on here some time ago where he talked about the danger of overpromising. One has to remember that the global wine business is accountable for, I mean, if I said a couple of percent, a percent even, you know, it could be an order of magnitude less, and I might be, but if it's for a couple of percent of global emissions, if that...
No, 0.02, I've heard.
So 0.02, and I was saying a couple of percent, by two orders of magnitude, I'm overestimating the scale of the global wine business. Of that, packaging changes could... potentially, if we completely abandon glass bottles totally, we could perhaps reduce those emissions by half because we wouldn't be moving glass around and so on. That's the stroke of a pen of a Chinese diplomat who vaguely thinks that he might want slightly boosted power for TV watching in a part of Ningxia province. I mean, this is so unbelievably small. Whilst wine brands feel the effects of climate change very significantly, their ability to make a material difference is very, very small. And so the sense that you are able to materially move the dial when, it has to be said, we haven't actually agreed on what it really is, and in fact, many of the things that get clustered with sustainability are completely sort of bogus, that becomes one problem. The other problem is talking about sustainability actually runs the risk of turning people off. And I think one of the big problems we face in the wine business, I mean, in a sense, I'm agreeing with you, and actually we probably should talk about it an awful lot less. I mean, it's weird. We're on sustainability wine roundtable. I actually think we should be talking about it a lot less, or we should be extremely structured and thoughtful about the way we do talk about sustainability. Some really fascinating research has come out of Ogilvy Change, so the behavioral science division of Ogilvy. I'm very fortunate I get to do bits of consulting with Ogilvy Change, and kind of behavioral science is an area of work. Now, one of those parts is other people's feelings don't care about your facts. I don't know, this is sort of a twist of the modern kind of debate. Customers care about how they feel about your products. They don't actually care that much about the facts on the ground of what you've done. And we know this from really, really consistent research of people who engage with stuff, which is, let's say, about two-thirds of people who are open to the idea of engaging with it, maybe a bit more. A vanishingly small number of people in the UK believe the claims of any company that claims to be going and making a material difference. And I think it's something like only 12% of UK consumers believe that companies are sincere when they talk about their environmental claims. It is the most skeptical nation in the world when it comes to claims around sustainability and green measures. People believe that they are the primary drivers and agents of change. Where this comes up against a problem, so we have these two things. They think that companies are talking absolute mince. Their default setting, by and large, is that companies are lying. Their default setting is that they are the ones who will make the change. The problem comes that they are prepared to make almost no altruistic concessions whatsoever. And our default setting is if I see sustainability on a label, my presumption is that it's a trade-off, that I've had to give something up, normally in terms of less flavor, less quality, or higher price for the same quality, or, this is a very behavioral science kind of thing, I'm going to sacrifice some element of status and social approval, because I'm going to be seen as a bit of a crank, that you have to make that trade-off in order to buy the product. Now, there is actually a sort of interesting outcome for this, which is if you are going to talk, make sustainability claims as a wine brand, it is absolutely vital what you say is, in order for our wine to taste this good or to cost, to be this great value, we became more sustainable. So it has to be framed in the way, it's like rather tedious. I think Francis Cairncross, the environmental economist, gave me this phrase, which was, it's got to have a negative abatement cost. So in that sense, the abatement, the environmental abatement, making the world a better place, needs to come with a negative cost. It needs to actually sort of cost less, if you like, or indeed cost the same for a higher output. People are only interested in environmental claims when essentially they come with a negative abatement cost in that sense. I mean, I think my argument for going and saying why we shouldn't talk about environmental claims is very different to yours. Yours, I think, is founded on quite an objective sense, which is we actually haven't worked out what these things are yet. We kind of don't really know what sustainability is. I mean, is that right, Tobin?
As Blackadder would say, yes and no. We know what elements of it look like. And it's the difficulty in talking about the elements that we've tackled that remains the early stage challenge. Let me give you an example. Lightweighting of glass. You mentioned we could reduce wine's climate footprint by 50%. Certainly, like so, the bottle and the process of using the bottle, somewhere between 35-40%, maybe 50, as you say. We at SWR have got a whole bunch of retailers, more than a dozen now, to commit to reducing average glass bottle weight, non-sparkling, to 420 grams across the range by the end of 2026 as part of our bottle weight accord. That saves something like 20-25% of CO2 emissions in that area. Now that, we're very happy with. All credit to my colleague, Dr. Peter Sternberg, who's led that work, and to the retailers who have supported us. Well, how do you talk about that to consumers? I don't think you can. Maybe you can say, lighter glass, 420, you have a little symbol. But how many symbols can you put on a label? Right? We now have ingredient labeling coming in, and we have an increased risk of greenwash, where you can now actually be fined and people might even go to jail for greenwashing. Certainly, the financial penalties are rising. And so my concern is that, yes, we've done some bits of it, and we've made some great strides in certain areas. But how do you actually just tell someone that story? Because, of course, their immediate thing would be, well, okay, what about the rest of it? Whilst consumers are perhaps all the things you've said, Joe, they're also pretty clued up these days. I can remember a major chocolate company, which I will not name, having a massive issue 15, 20 years ago because the cocoa in their chocolate was Rainforest Alliance certified, but the palm oil wasn't. That became quite a big deal. And so consumers are not dumb in the sense that they are surrounded by environmental messaging all the time. So how can we take the 20% that we've done and talk about it? That's where I see the real challenge. And I'm not sure how we tackle that, because I think the current round of labeling hasn't worked. Organic, biodynamic, et cetera, natural. Well, they often have higher footprints and they have their own challenges. So what do we do? So let's make this granular, Joe. Let's say I'm your next client. I am a senior executive of one of the world's largest wine companies who is a leading member of SWR. And I call you up like this. I say, Joe, we're members of SWR. We do other stuff. We've made some great progress. We're reducing glass bottle weight. We are being much more thoughtful on our chemistry use. We're looking at reducing carbon emissions and therefore occupational injuries in the distribution line. We've got great inclusion policies. We're getting there, but we're aware there's a whole lot of stuff we haven't done. How do we talk to our customers about this? Now, your answer might be, what do you mean by customers? But they might say, how do we communicate about this? So what are your thoughts there, Jim? Let's make this a bit more granular.
Another question, in a sense, and I'll have to sort of qualify this, why are you going to tell them? And what's the point of going and telling them these things? So, I mean, let's say you have introduced a new accounting standard that more accurately reflects your profit and loss and your liabilities and your assets, which means that you are floating through your audits much better and you are able to go and give a much more accurate picture of your profitability as a business back to your shareholders. Nobody ever says to their customers, we'd like you to know, actually, we've gone and adopted a new accounting standard. And actually, that means that we're able to be much more precise and give a much more accurate assessment of our profitability to our customers, because nobody would really kind of care. You might say, oh, customers care about environmental issues. They do. By and large, they know what those things are. So if you ask across the board, I mean, this is not just in wine, about 82%. So, you know, the vast majority of customers broadly say, well, I know what I need to do to live my life more sustainably. I'm actually pretty comfortable. I know all the things. So when you say new labeling standards and new stickers and things don't add very much, we're kind of not surprised, because actually, by and large, people know how to go and do that. Now, if you say to customers, are you able to live more sustainably? The number collapses. In fact, it's almost completely the other way around. It's about 12% of people say, I'm able to live a sustainable life quite comfortably. Now, I think part of that comes from the basis that they feel that they have to go out and hunt for and understand lots and lots of different certifications. But also they have to get to grips with it all, that you can't just go and enjoy the product. And the default setting is, I mean, two default settings. One is, I'm almost certainly making a trade-off in buying these products. So I'm definitely going to have to spend more for the same, or spend the same and get something that's kind of shitty to a degree. So I think that's one default setting. The other default setting is they just don't trust companies to go and do sustainability right. That is not a wine thing. It's just the general thing that, by and large, most customers, particularly in the US, in the UK, I think it's something like 77% of people in Britain, by and large, think that companies will always put profit ahead of sustainability. In fairness, I suspect they probably will. And we'll try and cover that up to some degree. So I think a lot of people have this default setting. So my view would be, by and large, try and make the best wine you can. Try and make sure that you are appealing to customers' self-interest, which is a generally good thing to do in marketing. And essentially, that's what marketing is. It says your life will be better to some degree by going and enjoying this kind of product, where you can tie a genuine customer benefit back to sustainable practice. Then there's a really valid case for using that. So where you were able to say, since we went with whatever sustainable, we did something in the vineyard, we have consistently won more prizes. Even we believe our wines taste better and our fans do too. Then that's a really good case, because somebody's going, it's in my self-interest that you did this thing. The same with buying it by a box. Even if it comes down to the sort of sense of it's easier to get it home in a box than in three bottles. Well, now you're speaking to my self-interest. And it's greener too. So then you get that sense that actually sustainability is much more of a hygiene factor in marketing terms than it is one of those things where you sort of hammer away at people. Because if you hammer it away at people, their default setting is that you're probably lying to them. Whether you are or not, they sort of don't care. One sort of weird example. Now, just bear in mind, I'm absolutely not knocking in any way the Royal Warrant system. But I've been through two Royal Warrant certifications, and I was, you know, I had to compile. It takes a very long time. Why is that significant for sustainability? Because most of the work is going and fulfilling what were the kind of Prince's Trust regulations and bookkeeping and all the sort of work that you have to do to show that your product was made sustainably and ethically and fair and so on. You know, I would go and see these things going through, and yet subsequently you would go and find out that producers were doing things that weren't necessarily sustainable and they weren't necessarily ethical. You know, we are aware that there have been cases of modern slavery in Italy of all countries. These are things that are happening today, not necessarily coming through Royal Warrant merchants, but we're not uncovering these, even though supermarkets, Royal Warrants, all of these people are going and doing endless amounts of certification. Now, it only takes one case for somebody to go through that and then to go and find, well, actually, it turned out that there was appalling pay inequality. You know, it actually turned out that there were shipping wine across boundaries for the whole thing to collapse. And then people get really, really cross. They feel as though they've been shortchanged. So by and large, my answer would be, don't talk about it. There's actually a bigger downside for you doing it than there is an upside, unless you can really prove it and you know it's absolutely solid.
The gains at the moment tend to be more on the boring bit of sustainability, you know, reverse logistics, reducing inefficiencies, cutting costs. The sustainable wine bottle weight accord, which is now turning into a packaging accord with bottle weight as part of it, is a case in point. We're doing stuff as good as we can for the environment now on bottle weight, and that is a good verifiable thing. But I can't imagine doing a marketing campaign to consumers about it. So how would you even mention progress? Let's take it down a level. We seem to be largely in agreement, which I'm disappointed with. Let's say that we want to tell consumers we are a large wine company who's done some good stuff, but we recognize there's a lot more to do. We do feel the need to communicate because the CEO wants us to, and he's not going to read all your research. He just wants us to say something because he's off to the opera or something, and someone might ask him about it. You know, that's a bit of an old school characterization, CEO, I realize. But sometimes boards want things to happen just because they want them to happen. So your new client, large wine company senior director, has to do something, and they've done some stuff, but they don't want to call themselves a sustainable company. I mean, Walmart set itself up for a real fall by saying it wants to become a regenerative company. And nobody knows what that means. But in this large company who are hiring new as a consultant, we've done some good stuff. We're proud of it. We want our people to know. Our internal people see external communications, and that audience matters. So what do we do? Do we just sort of put some stuff up on the website? Is there something else that we can do without greenwashing and without overclaiming?
My gut sense to people slightly below down the value chain will be to say, yeah, go and do some puff pieces in trade media that consumers aren't going to go and see, and put it on a relatively hidden away page on your website. Oh no, it doesn't even need to be hidden away. You know, when you do a bit of market segmentation, you're absolutely right. Maybe a third of your customers are genuinely, Cantor would put it, eco-actives. It's a good thing to be able to point them in that direction and say, well, look, it's all over here. This is all of our stuff that we've gone and done, and this is the progress that we've made. The challenge is that if you've got a CEO who says, well, I want this front and center, I want this to be the leading part. I mean, I hear quite a lot of people, the number one part of our marketing strategy is that we're a sustainable winery. My argument very strongly would be that's a terrible marketing strategy. I mean, it's not really one. It's being done to sort of buffer your own interests, not actually the interests of the customer. And customers are horrendously selfish. I think you'd probably have to come back to them with certain elements of like hard data. One of those numbers that slightly sort of blew my mind. So about 3/4 of customers say that brand reputation, which obviously, you know, lots of people, why do you do it? Oh, I want my, you know, my brand reputation. I want my brand to be seen as this great sustainable wine brand. 74% of people say brand reputation makes no difference to whether they will purchase stuff. It doesn't make any difference. They're not buying into it. Not having that there might diminish your brand reputation for some people who are engaged. You can have it in your back pocket to come out and bring up somebody. But the notion that people will go and buy you because you're a sustainable wine brand, slightly irrespective of price, quality, availability, whether or not it's suitable for the occasion that they've got, that's a complete fiction. People don't work that way. And people are trapped into this sort of sustainability bubble of thinking that it's something that will move the dial, which it really won't. I mean, you're absolutely right. CEOs do go and do this, and they get these sort of grand ideas. And we know, and this is much broader, but I recommend to anybody, go and read Steve Harrison, a brilliant copywriter, his book on corporate purpose. And I'm trying to remember the name of it. I'm sure we could put it on the thing later. Steve Harrison, who great friend. We talk about wine a lot. He taught me all I know about copywriting. He has written an excoriating account of where advertising has gone wrong because it stopped trying to sell people stuff. And bear in mind, our job is to sell people stuff, and it wants to save the world. And actually, wanting to save the world is kind of an easier job because all you need to do is to say, I'm here to save the world. Actually, the harder job is to go and sell stuff. Advertisers go and buff brands up and say, oh, didn't you do a marvelous job of saving the world? Wine merchants and wine retailers and wine producers can't do that. We have to sell the product. And the brutal truth of it is people buy wine because they're massively self-interested, because it fits a purpose, because of the need state. I want the number one reason people drink wine is because I'm knackered and I'm having a meal. Number two is pretty much I want to treat myself and I'm watching TV. That's why people want to go and drink wine, because it's sustainable is way off the bottom of the graph. Nobody's really there. Is it sustainable? Because somebody's asked me, it's useful to know that there's a place I can find that out.
Very interesting. Well, we should draw this to a close because we can and will do much more of this as we have done in the past. One of the things you said absolutely chimed with me, and it is the best reason to communicate and the best defense, which is hard data. So can you put something out there which you can prove? And 99% of people could look at that methodology and say, okay, that's as good as it gets. That increasingly is where companies do have material. Better technology, better data collection, better end-to-end accounting is giving that data. And far better, I think we're both agreeing, to major on that than on sort of lofty aspirations. And my God, there are so many of them in wine. Interesting. I mean, I get emails, right, from producers from all over the world who sort of found the Sustainable Wine website and just send me an email going, and they're just desperate for validation. And it's really sweet. I think they're fantastic people. You know, they email me saying, I've got the Sustainable Winery. I'm somewhere in rural Spain, and this is what I'm doing. And I've always written back to them saying, congratulations, well done. You know, without wanting to sound patronizing anyway, brilliant, well done. Can I ask you a few questions? And 5-6 years ago when I was doing this, most of them were coming out pretty empty. I've just had recently 5 or 6 of them come back with some of the most comprehensive emails I've ever seen from small wineries with data points. So I think there's been a real transformation amongst perhaps who you might call the leaders, whether they're small rural wineries somewhere or Treasury Wine Estates or Conchitoro. And that is leading to those hard data points, which can be quite convincing. So next time, let's talk about how we might use hard data and what mediums and channels. Let's have a think about how we can provide more practical insight into using that.
I'd love that, Toby. It's always a pleasure to come on. We always end up having fascinating chats. You always make me think more, even though I wang on.
And I feel like a failure that we have not disagreed more. Damn it.
We'll work on that one.
I have to take a super right wing or super left wing, which still ends up being the same thing, doesn't it? So for politics, perspective at some point. But the problem with that is you just end up in politics, because broadly speaking, once you get into the details of sustainability, we all end up agreeing. But I think, listener, we have offered some insight. We have been of some use to you, I think, listener, I'd like to say. I'd like to posit. So in the meantime, we'll let you get on with your work. And Joe and I will be back soon. Joe, thanks very much for your time on the Sustainable Wine Roundtable podcast. Thank you.